and welcome to React Native Radio. I'm your guest, Nader Davit. Today on our panel, we have Peter Piekarczyk.
Hey, everybody.
And our special guests today are a couple of people from the Facebook team, Constantine Rave and Blair Vanderhoof. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hello.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. I know we've had a few episodes in the past where we've had some Facebook team members join us. It's been at least a year, though. I know that I think the last time we had someone on was Parish Room, and he recently maybe left the Facebook team. So I'm really, really glad to have some more people here to kind of go over what all has been going on over the last year or so. So I kind of think before we get into the discussion, do you all mind giving us a quick introduction to each of yourselves and how you got to be working at Facebook on React Native?
Sure. Yeah, I can start. This is Blair. Yeah, so I joined Facebook about 4.5 years ago. I've been doing pretty much web development all my life. For me, you know, UI has always been a huge passion of mine. So JavaScript and at the time, React had just been super amazing. When I joined Facebook, I think React was just really early at the time. This is about 2014. So I didn't go into Facebook with the intention of like wanting to do React right off the bat. I was actually still, I think, writing Backbone.js. I was super big into Backbone at the time when I was working at Skype. But when I got hired by Facebook, it was a great opportunity for me to really pick up React and just double down on it. I joined a team that built out the Messenger payments feature in Facebook. So the ability to send money between your friends on Facebook.com or Messenger.com. And that was completely built with React. We used Flux and all that sort of good stuff. And about 2 years into that project, once we had launched it, Marketplace had been kind of being built, which is a team that I'm working on now. I worked on a couple parts of it that were related to new products within Marketplace. It was always kind of like a little bit separate with Marketplace at the time. Marketplace is like this tab within Facebook app, or it's almost like its own application within Facebook. So I eventually got to a point where we needed to kind of integrate our product into Marketplace itself. And that's when React Native almost became like a full-time thing for me since the past, I guess, 2.5 years now. Absolutely love it. Couldn't imagine doing any other way of developing UI right now for mobile, at least. So yeah, super privileged and excited to be working on Marketplace full-time.
And you, Constantine?
Oh, yeah. I joined Facebook 3.5 years ago. Before that, I worked on startups, and my passion was build tools and, coincidentally, node modules stability on JavaScript projects. So I had a chance to join React Native team right from entering Facebook. And one of the big issues that we were solving was, hey, what do we do with node modules? And pretty much every company in the industry had this problem. So I was working on build tools stability. And at some point, Yarn was invented by the guy who created Babel.js. So I was working on Yarn, working on offline mirror feature and open sourcing it. And at some point, 1.5 years ago, I realized that I haven't used actually React and React Native in production much. So I was looking for a team to fulfill that idea and came to Marketplace and work with Blair now. So the idea is I work on performance mostly, kind of a cross-cutting concern, less product work, but more product infra. That's me.
Okay, cool. So it sounds like you come from, I guess, maybe a Node background, maybe like a JavaScript background?
Yeah. I'm a JavaScript developer. Before that, I was a Java developer. And 10 years ago, I was a C++ developer.
Oh, wow. Okay. And what about you, Blair? What were you working on before React Native? Have you ever worked in the native space specifically?
No. I kind of joke that the only language I really know is JavaScript. I'm a pretty poor native developer, and I think that's one of the reasons I love React Native so much, is it lets me target the mobile audience without having to become an expert all over again with UI on Android and Objective-C. You know, I've tried to pick it up a bit. I've taken some courses that Facebook's provide, at least for iOS development, and you know, I can get by writing Objective-C and building an iOS app, but you definitely don't feel the same kind of power that React Native gives you, just being able to use your years and years of JavaScript experience to build a native app is, I think, for me, is a key selling point, and it was why I enjoy it so much.
Yeah, I've been using React Native for like over 3 years now. And for the first time ever, tried to build a Java app last week. I took a tutorial doing like a to-do app. And the number one thing I noticed was the layout, like how much more verbose kind of getting the layout to work and just describing how your layout looks is a lot more verbose I found in Android. But of course, it's two completely different things. But I can definitely see where people kind of, you know, jump from some of the native space into React Native and why they may like it for especially for layouts. But I guess, specifically for Marketplace, I know Marketplace was one of the original like big apps that kind of came into the space that were React Native. And then since then, we've seen a lot of other apps come out, a lot of other companies now using it, enterprise companies. But I'm kind of curious, at the very beginning stages of kind of doing the Marketplace app, is there anything that you would like to talk about, maybe that you've learned that might be useful to people listening, things that you did at first that you had to redo later on, some lessons learned or anything like that?
Yeah, I'm sure Constantine has some good stuff to talk about with related to performance for sure.
Yeah, definitely performance is always a hot topic here. Also kind of, I know some of the APIs have changed and I know a lot of people always have questions and we do too at AWS. A lot of the companies or a lot of the teams that I work with around performance with lists in particular. So I'd like to talk about that later on as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, one of the biggest learnings, I think, for Facebook is to use type system in your code base. It was a huge tax to pay a year after the code was written in vanilla JavaScript. When the team grew beyond like 20, 30 people, it became really hard to maintain. So that's one of the things that I would recommend pretty much every company. If you're starting serious to build a React Native app, do types. Both TypeScript and Flow have their own advantages. But they're more or less translatable to each other. As for performance, that's a huge topic. I was working on the Marketplace performance for the last year and a half. Blair was joining at hard times as an artillery kind of person who delivered big wins. The basic idea is the same. Do less at the most critical time. So basically, I'm actually going to make a talk about this in a month. The basic idea is to get flame charts and understand what's happening during your startup and try to delay things to after startup. Prefer using one component rather than multiple one inside each other. And also a big deal is your native code. Sometimes people, when they start up React Native applications, they don't know what's happening in the native. And quite often the modules that are loading, quite often the modules that interface JavaScript to native, they also need to load Java classes. So sometimes that's not necessary, especially for startup, and can be delayed as well.
So I guess someone that's just getting into React Native, what if they're just kind of using a blank React Native app, they haven't really written any native code? That's probably less applicable to them, but more applicable to people that have like written their native modules, I'm guessing?
Well, actually, React Native loads by default a number of native modules. You know, the ones that are included with React Native, like Maps system is probably turned on by default, maybe some other basic things. So it's actually good to revise things. But most important is actually to measure what's happening during startup.
I would say, you know, if you're just a startup or somebody who wants to do a side project and experiment with React Native, performance is probably not going to be an issue for you. The reason performance is important for Marketplace is because we're part of the Facebook app family, and we want to make sure that experience across any part of Facebook is super fast. So, you know, that means that we set a goal for ourselves on like how fast we want to load Marketplace, and that to get there is often pretty challenging. We have to make a lot of, you know, really interesting solutions, both on, you know, the product side and also, of course, on the network request side. You know, all that stuff coming together can impact the perception of how fast the app loads. But for, you know, people just working on, you know, of course, like I mentioned, the side projects or even a startup, React Native is going to be super fast for you. I mean, it's going to be bare bones. You're going to be loading up. You're going to be creating views and all that stuff from the ground up. You're going to be having a pretty blank slate. I think it's when you get towards like having a ton of code like we do in Marketplace. There's so much utility there. There's so many code paths that it becomes definitely a big challenge.
Yeah, that's kind of the same experience I've seen. When we have companies that are like when you're prototyping something or if you're building an MVP or even you're building the first version of your product, you know, it's usually not an issue as far as performance. It's when you start adding to your code and adding features and you know, stuff like that is when you start to see more things. And at Amazon, we have, you know, a few different apps that are huge. And a slight difference than native and performance can lead to a lot of difference as far as like revenue and those types of things are really taken seriously. So we've spent a lot of time as far as trying to figure out ways to make things more performant. And I agree, one of the main things that we focused on is getting the load time of the initial app load is one of the main issues, actually, like you mentioned, and trying to not do a lot of stuff, wait until the app loads or wait until you actually need what you're fetching or what you're doing before you actually invoke something. So what about some of the new architecture that's happening? How is that affecting what you all are doing? Do you all get to use some of that stuff early or do you have input on some of that stuff?
Personally, I don't have a lot to talk about on that front. I'm actually not sure, you know, what stuff is public and what isn't. So, Anthony, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I can feel some of the ideas. So, there is React. So, Fabric, I think that was publicly known. It's the idea that I think it's a new implementation of the View Manager that's going to be cross-platform. And it's basically how React JavaScript interacts with the native part, both on Objective-C and Android. That's what React Native team is working really hard on. What it will bring is probably it will bring performance and stability across platforms and consistency. The thing is that Facebook is a little bit special building open source products and products in general. Sometimes it starts with a hack. And then it grows up into something bigger. And of course, products and features that are based on this, very often, they just grow too fast to actually stop for a second and think about the how it will grow over time. So sometimes teams need to have a little bit time off and actually redesign the system and make it more consistent. Another cool thing that's also public knowledge is about using bytecode instead of JavaScript when you start up application. I think a few companies are doing that. That's a very interesting topic, actually, across the web. People always ask, like, a lot of times, what can we do to make our websites load faster? What if we don't send JavaScript as text that needs to be parsed, but actually as bytecode? And of course, it's platform-specific. The browsers haven't arrived to a single bytecode structure that they could share. There are a lot of logistical problems. But for mobile systems, when you have one engine that's running the application across Android and iOS, you can actually make some assumptions and ship bytecode that's JSC compatible. It will be larger than the JavaScript file, which is counterintuitive. Like, you have to download it. It's probably like 3 or 4 times larger. But it will usually execute faster because you don't need to parse that code. Some other technical things that React Native team is working are quite exciting as well. I'm pretty sure they will, they either already blogged about it or they're going to announce it soon.
Yeah, if anyone listening has been keeping an eye on their blog, they've been having a few updates lately about some of the stuff that they're working on. So I know that a lot of people are interested to kind of see that implemented. I know that there is a lot of discussion around the bridging and how a lot of people new to the space kind of, find it hard to get into building their own native modules. And I think that's not really a solution that can be provided by an improvement, I don't think, to the framework, because I think at the core of that lies you should know how to write some native code on either or platform before you're able to write these bridges. So I think that's a different discussion, but I would say, like, if that's kind of what your issue is, I think the best teams that I've seen that are delivering like real hardcore React Native apps in production seem to have like either a native consultant on board or a native developer that can implement things can debug things at least when things come up.
Hey, I'm just joining the conversation, but that's sort of something that like DraftBit, the platform that we're working on, is trying to solve too for people. And if you haven't heard of DraftBit, it's sort of like a visual way to build. Right now we're targeting React Native apps. You can think of it almost like a layout engine as a service where we just handle all the intricacies of, different screen sizes, different resolutions, different things that you forget about, like handling the screen layout on like an iPhone 5 versus an iPhone XS Max, right? And how like you may want things to justify content or, like without managing too much logic or bashing your head into the wall for why don't these things work.
So are you all involved in the open source development of the React Native framework itself, or do you more just use it within the company?
For myself, I'm a product developer for Marketplace. So my main thing day to day is, building out, features in React Native. And then there's also the kind of performance initiatives that we do to make, the load up time for Marketplace as fast as possible, which is still mostly front end code and kind of reorganizing it and doing the flame chart analysis like Constantine mentioned and finding slow components. But for me myself, it's just mostly building out a lot of UI components and a lot of features and a lot of interactivity, with network calls, just basic like CRUD functionality.
Yeah, I could add something quite cool about Facebook and some other big companies in the industry is we use monorepo for our infrastructure and multiple products. This way we share our code. But it also means that if we need a feature or a change in a framework, we can actually send a change request within the same repository. Pretty much everyone in the company is responsible for the code. Of course, if you are not familiar with React Native internals, you would need some help and reviews from React Native team. But the general idea is that pull requests are welcome from anyone, and quite often product developers do send changes to the framework. But at this stage in Marketplace, we are all into product. We have so many developers working on features, and we are actually also lucky that we have quite a few infrastructure teams supporting us so that we could keep up with the pace.
The interesting thing is that because we have so many folks, working on Marketplace, and, I'd argue it's one of the bigger React Native applications, is a lot of the stuff that we find, maybe issues with, either it's like maybe some weird thing with scroll views or with flat lists. Something with like core components or just like, feature interactivity, things of like the yoga layout engine with Flexbox. A lot of that stuff that we, encounter because we work on it so much, from the product sense is it tends to make itself back into the actual open source, part of things. So, the infra team that we have at Facebook will, take a look at one of these issues, validate it, and maybe make a fix for it. Or, sometimes one of our product developers who's capable of making those changes, gets it approved and patched in. But it's almost like a really nice test bed to kind of validate things are working well with React Native just by force of so many people working with React Native day to day.
What's the story with... React Native and Reason on the marketplace team. As I know, for example, like Messengers has had a lot of like case studies for using Reason. Is that something that your team is interested in or entertaining, or is that sort of off the books right now?
Go ahead, Constantine.
As far as I know, Reason in marketplace is not used. There are web parts, React parts of the website. I think messenger.com is using quite a lot of Reason and then transpose it to JavaScript. As for Reason for React Native, I think Expo is building this in the open source. I may be wrong, but there is a big effort in the open source where people just rewrite React Native View Manager in Reason, and then everything runs in a single thread, which is very convenient. But as for Marketplace, we're quite satisfied with vanilla React Native. The thing is, we have quite a lot of product generalists on the team that are, they don't have specific knowledge or urge to work on functional languages. They work across PHP code base in the backend and JavaScript in the front end, so they can focus on features. And JavaScript satisfies us. Of course, there is an assumption that Reason could perform better, which is a huge effort right now in Marketplace. But it would be a big thing to change. So,
cool. In terms of performance on the React Native side, I've heard a lot about prepack, and I'm not sure if you have already talked about prepack, but is that something that, like, I know right now it's very alpha, but is that something that you're trying in like a production environment?
Yeah, we actually tried prepack. We actually tried quite a lot of ways how we can change the bundle that gets delivered to the device. There are so many things that I would love us to share more. It's not a secret. It's just the teams working on performance are so busy with many ideas. Besides prepack, we work on splitting the bundle and delivering only part of it to the critical path of loading, and then downloading the rest. I'm talking about Android, of course. We also have ways to, how do you compose your bundle? Is it a large statement bundle or is it some kind of other system? There are a lot of wins in this area. As for prepack for Marketplace, we did try it 6 months ago. It showed some wins, but compared to other bottlenecks, it didn't actually deliver that much as we were hoping. So we shelved it for some time to focus on other performance features. With prepack, I pretty much suggest everyone to give it a try to see how it performs in production and see where it goes. Another subject to touch is open source and Facebook projects. Sometimes it's a little bit tricky because the teams working on specific projects can be focusing on something impactful that's not the project that they released. So it's something to evaluate. Prepack is a little bit experimental. So if you're going to try it, make sure that you can be self-sustaining and be able to maintain it. Because sometimes Facebook, well, that's probably a known fact, and people complain a lot, like, why are my pull requests not merged, or why are issues not reviewed as fast as I wish they were? So when you're taking an experimental project, make sure that you're comfortable maintaining it for some time before a new version comes out.
So I have a question. This is kind of a little different than what we've been talking about, but I know we've had some discussion about this in the past with other people from Facebook about if they have a new product or a new feature or a new something that they want to work on, they kind of have the opportunity to choose the technology maybe that they want to use. And I guess it depends on what it is, because if you're choosing React Native versus Native or something else, it would have to be a pretty big new for either a project or maybe a prototype. But I'm wondering, is it still like that at Facebook, where if you can, you kind of have the option to choose the type of technology stack that you'd like to work with? And if so, do you still see React Native being pretty popular there?
Yeah, we have a lot of different technologies to create UI within Facebook, and you know, it's really comes down to, you know, is this a new surface? Is this a new standalone app? What technology is your team most comfortable with writing? So we've got a variety of different ways to create UI, whether it's through PHP and Hack, native Android, native iOS, or React Native. I think React Native is always a really attractive solution for people, because I think a lot of engineers, even if they're used to working on the back end, they have experience with writing React. And I think that's really the thing that shines the most, is if people can have that really awesome React experience, where React takes care of so much of the complicated parts of updating the UI and maintaining state, and being able to apply that to native with the benefit of getting actual native UI. This isn't like a web view that, you know, people are used to, where, you know, you're writing like a PhoneGap or Cordova app. This is like real actual native UI. You're getting, you know, 60 frames per second animations and interactions, for people to be able to leverage all that experience with React and the familiarity. That's where we see a lot of developers get on board with React Native and wanting to try it and build something from scratch. Typically it's being used with new views. So, you know, good examples are like, you know, something in something like maybe the settings view, we have like kind of these bookmark sections where we have like a lot of kind of mini app experiences. You know, oftentimes people will build out a new section in there where, you know, you tap it and then it invokes a, you know, React Native view controller. And from that point on, it's like a React Native experience. We have some experiments that we've run in the past where we've actually put hybrid React Native elements within the main Facebook native experience. So some things like buy and sell groups. We have things where, you know, the entire feed is native, but we have like a React Native kind of a little portal somewhere in the experience. And then instead of that, we inject, you know, React Native content for the sole purpose that we can write code in JavaScript and have it apply to both Android and iOS without having to worry about updating to UIs, especially if your team isn't really adjusted to writing good native Android or iOS code. So I guess to answer your question, yeah, technology is really open. We don't mandate any specific type of tech stack. And that's the beauty of it. And it really depends on what your team's strengths are and what you're trying to achieve and what surface you're working in.
Would there be, say, you wanted to roll your own framework, or, you know, like use Flutter instead of React Native? How do you handle that situation? You know, like, is it a situation, or is it just like, yeah, you're on, you know, as long as you get the product out, you're good?
I mean, I think if there's like, you know, I'm not quite sure about the Flutter situation, but, you know, there can be situations where maybe when writing a React Native surface or screen, there's some really attractive like open source library that does, you know, maybe something really interesting with video, or something really helpful that, you know, we don't have internally within our library or our toolkit. So we can sometimes make the case on how do we integrate that into Facebook. You know, of course, there's a lot of things to consider when you're taking a third-party library and bringing it into, you know, the main Facebook app. But yeah, you know, of course, like our motto is like move fast. But I think Facebook's motto has kind of evolved actually recently, which is kind of like move fast and also be stable. So, you know, quality and like finesse and really fast, good experiences is like really on the forefront of every developer's mind right now. And we want to make sure that the app feels polished. So bringing in third-party libraries is always tricky because you're dealing with, you know, code that you don't really control as much. So there's a big trade-off, but, you know, we've made cases for it in the past. So definitely not strict, you know, like that's not a strict no from that standpoint.
That's pretty cool. When you do bring in a third-party library, and this, you know, like especially in the React Native world, especially when we were talking like version 16 through 25, right? When, you know, there were readmes where you'd say, if you're using React Native 16 or less, use this. 17 to 27, use this, right? And 27, 28 and above, use this, right? How does Facebook manage that internally? Do you still like install off the NPM registry, or does it like clone into the ecosystem and now you've got like, this is the version that, you know, like we are self-hosting now, right? Like, what's that like?
Oh, I'm very excited to answer this question. So as I talked in the beginning, I worked on this system before, and node modules was a big deal. It's literally, especially NPM 2 times, it was for React Native 100,000 files. And especially if you want to change something, NPM 2 could rearrange your node modules even if you add something very little. So we could have a commit with 10,000 files every day if people were working on some popular library, updating it. So at some point, even a team that manages Mercurial was knocking on React Native's door and saying, hey guys, you're noticeable at the scale of Facebook source code, so please don't do that. And there were many solutions. Hey, how do we make it stable without committing the source code, like the whole node modules? And that's when Yarn came around that I talked about, and Offline Mirror. For those who don't know, Offline Mirror is a very basic idea. It just, when you first install the node modules, the packages from NPM, it also copies those tar.gzip files into a folder, which we check in. For React Native, it was like 50 megabytes instead of much more when it's unzipped. And it was like, I don't know, 500 files instead of 100,000. So it was manageable to check in instead of maintaining a local NPM mirror that would be like pretending that it's an NPM registry and respond you with whatever we cached at some point. So it was more or less a maintainable solution. The idea behind bringing in a third-party library is that the developer who brought it in is responsible for maintaining it, well, besides the infra teams. So if you are, and also another thing, for React versions, inside Facebook, we don't know what version it is now public of React, because we are running from master branch, basically. So we're running from latest, and if we're bringing in a library, we just make sure that it works with latest. It's maintainable, it's safe, we have audit systems that make sure that there are no Trojans in it. Going forward, if the library is a trouble, like it stops being supported and React moved on, we can consider forking it internally, or forking it publicly, or implementing the bits that we are using, depending how big is the library, with our own ways.
That's really, really cool. I'm sort of thinking about the whole like Trojans thing. Do you basically just like parse the code and look for like network requests or like, you know, like funky things that could be happening like behind the scenes?
Well, I can't tell you all the details because, well, you know.
Of course.
there are automated systems that look into what's inside those packages. We also use some due diligence understanding what are the dependencies. When we run our build systems, we're off the network when we build our bundles. And we do it a million times a day. That's why we actually couldn't rely on downloading packages from NPM in production, because we have quite a lot of builds happening. So There are many ways. Besides parsing and understanding what's inside, our security team monitors NPM packages, and also we don't allow network requests.
Cool. Are there any other exciting React Native libraries that, you know, maybe are open source, but just the community hasn't really, learned about them? You know, like Prepack's been out for a while, you know, but is there anything else that, you know, we as a community should, you know, like maybe it's just like not ready yet, maybe it's experimental, but things that we should maybe take a look at?
First of all, watch the news. There are exciting things coming all the time, and maybe something will pop up that will shake the ecosystem a little bit. So keep waiting. In general, I think the whole idea of React Native is making its core slimmer so that it could be maintained easier, and then just pushing off the more specific things to the libraries. Personally, I don't know actually what to recommend. Vanilla is quite good. Maybe some of the styling libraries are quite nice when you can style your components more conveniently rather than just writing styles as JSON fields.
I guess the last question I have is, people that are listening, they might want to know like how to get to the point in their career where they can work kind of at a place like Facebook. And it's kind of something we talk about in a lot of our shows with our guests. So I'm kind of curious if you have any tips in general, like on a career, I guess, point of view versus a React Native point of view that you can give.
Yeah. Both Constantine and I are front-end engineers, and we conduct front-end interviews. So the nice thing about Facebook is it actually provides a front-end interview track, which, you know, a lot of big companies, if you go and interview with them and you're a real passionate JavaScript developer, you may get into a situation where you're, you know, going through the typical generalist interview trial, which is, it's always a bit of a bummer because, you know, you're like, hey, I don't do this sort of thing on a daily basis. Why am I whiteboarding, you know, binary tree traversals and the typical sort of algorithms you get. So, you know, if you love writing front end code, if JavaScript is a huge passion for you, and if you like writing React, or if you're interested in React Native and, you know, wanted to come and join Marketplace, I think, you know, just applying to Facebook as a front-end engineer, it's definitely a smaller, I think, pool of people that we get in. But the type of candidates we're looking for are kind of the people who really are passionate about UI. If that's something that you're into, Facebook provides a really great interview experience for you. I think the interviews that we conduct are very relevant. They really touch on like specific skills as a front end developer, you know, and I think it's a very, it's a good experience. So what I've seen, you know, from other, you know, big companies out there in terms of, you know, coming in and wanting to join as a front end developer.
Yeah, I pretty much support Blair's position here. When I was preparing for the interview, I came to the office and then people started asking me regular work questions, how to design, how to study, build this component. And I'm like, oh, and where are all the graphs and trees I have been preparing for all this time? it was a pleasant surprise. And Facebook front-end interview, we have quite a lot of positive feedback that people are pleasantly surprised about. Hey, this is a very relevant question I've been asked. I want to work there.
I love that. I know I've had quite a few bad experiences, but I've also had a few good experiences. And I think that people are recognizing, or companies are recognizing, the need to kind of fit the interview for the position, because now front-end engineering is like its own thing. And there are JavaScript developers that literally, like me, have done nothing but write JavaScript most of their careers, and we might not know these complex algorithms. I didn't go to school for computer science, and I really like that, though. That's really cool to hear.
Yeah, it's always super sad when you go to an interview and they don't really even pick out that you're a front end developer. You know, you're getting, you know, these questions like you mentioned where they're just way too nuanced. You know, they're like the kind of cracking the code interview question. It's kind of unfair, and you really don't want to be working at a place where, you know, you're not going to be harnessing your skills as a front end developer. If that's the kind of stuff you're going to be doing day to day, it's probably not going to be a lot of fun. So I agree with you on that.
So I think we can go ahead now and jump to the picks. I think I'll start with you, Peter. Any picks today?
I don't have any picks besides the shameless plug of DraftBit, which is our Reason-powered visual app builder for React Native. It lives on top of Expo, so you get the live preview. You drag and drop components and see the source code for what you're working on. And so far, it's been a really great tool to help you build layouts very rapidly. And also, as a coder or a beginner, see exactly what's going on. You know, like as you drag over like a list view and like select a component to render, you can see the code that's being generated. And that's like been like super helpful in our like early feedback. We're going to be releasing like a for fun tool called List Builder for React Native, which is just sort of like a small feature set of what we offer in the builder that we just decided to write in Reason. Just because, you know, that's like a buzzword right now, and just see where things go. So, check that out. We'll have like, example list for like how to rebuild like Netflix, or like the list view in Netflix, right? Or like, you know, like the Instagram, like, feed, or like the Facebook news feed, right? So like, you can just like select like, from a dropdown, like a preset, and it'll like, not only show you the code generated, there's like a bunch of like switches and toggles and things that you could change to get a desired feature. So I'm really excited about launching that too in the next couple of weeks. So if you're interested in the DraftBit platform, you can sign up at draftbit.com.
Nice. The website looks really good, and I'm on your list for a beta invite now. Constantine, do you have any picks?
Yeah. So for those who still have the PTSD syndrome about node modules, there is a thing called Yarn PNP plug and play. That's a way to install node modules without actually having the node modules folder. It does some experimental and tricky stuff, but very smart. To serve node modules from your cache folder so that your multiple projects, especially if you are doing React and React Native a lot, will share the same third-party dependency. But if you want to do some hacking, there is an eject command where it brings one single dependency that you want to like debug. That's a very cool feature to adopt in your company. It improves performance of your build system. And sometimes stability if you rely on network requests. So yeah, give it a try.
Blair, do you have any picks?
I don't have any specifics. You know, definitely on the hiring aspect, if you're interested in joining Facebook, you know, definitely feel free to reach out to, you know, myself or Constantine. I'm not sure if you guys have, you know, contacts or anything, but we're always open to, you know, referring really strong front end folks. In terms of React Native in general, you know, if you're interested in starting a brand new application, I think React Native is for sure the way to go. You know, if I was doing something, you know, from the ground up, you know, React Native would definitely be a big first pick for me. As Constantine mentioned, definitely make sure you have a type system in check if you're going to be starting anything from the ground up. Flow or TypeScript is going to work great. And then make sure you really read, you know, what React Native offers out of the box. You may not really need a lot of third-party libraries. I would try to not bring those in immediately. You know, React Native offers so many really cool components ready to use. One main thing that's like a really awesome performant way to do things is Flatlist. I think that's something that people often forget to leverage. It's just a really nice way of rendering long lists, the way that you would get, you know, performant list management with like the, you know, UI table view, like the recycling in iOS, keeps memory at, you know, at a constant level. Also provides some really cool hooks, you know, things that we've started to use recently, like sticky headers. Like you can define an indice to where you want a specific element in your list to stay kind of at the top. I've seen people recreate that from scratch. I'm like, hey, there's already a one single property for you to just add a value, and then you can get that for free. So check out the React Native docs when you get started. You know, there's a ton of useful stuff there that you can leverage without having to recreate on your own or, you know, bring in other libraries.
Awesome. I agree. React Native is like better than ever now. And with the new re-architecture slowly getting added, it's going to be even better, even 6 months, a year from now. So see a lot of enterprise companies starting to ship React Native lately. So my pick is going to be a book that I started reading called Godel, Escher, and Bach, An Eternal Golden Braid. I keep hearing about this book over the last 4 or 5 years, and I haven't really read it. And then I was watching this talk, and this guy really made a strong case for it. So I started reading it, and it's really cool. It's about how math, art, and music kind of have similar vein, and he goes into some crazy discussion about that. And then my other pick is an open source app that I'm releasing called Chat, C-H-A-T-T, that's written in React and GraphQL, and it's using Amplify and AppSync, you know, as the GraphQL backend and the provider for the other services like authentication and stuff. And it has real-time built in, but it also has offline capabilities built in. So if you're looking to build a chat app or anything real-time, it works with React or React Native. So it's written in React, but the actual Amplify project you can deploy to a React Native app, and the offline piece would work as well. So it's gonna be released under the name CHATT. So when this episode comes out, you should be able to just Google that. Well, that kind of wraps up this episode. So thanks, everyone, for listening. And thank you all for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
This wraps up this episode. We'll see everyone next week.